So I'm Susan Miller. I don't know if I need the microphone really, it's a small room. But I'm from Brown University, and I'm a professor in the Department of Health Services Practice and Policy, and I am also in the Center for Gerontology and Healthcare Research. I am not an ethicist or a lawyer, which Robert is here, but I'm called upon to give the presentations of our two presenters who aren't here today because of a travel back east. They both couldn't make it. So I have their presentations. I've condensed Mary Beth Morrissey's somewhat because, as I said, some of the thing goes really into a lot of the underlying, the philosophy and the ethics stuff that I don't know if I could explain enough. But anyways, I have the essence of her presentation and a Bruce Jennings that I'll do. We're going to try to keep it shorter, so we want it to be very interactive. And if any of you want to leave now that you know that Dr. Morrissey and Bruce Jennings aren't here, feel free. But we do have Robert Rivas, and Robert is an attorney from Tallahassee, Florida, a newspaper reporter in a former career. He has spent 20 years in defending First Amendment rights for journalists and others. In 1997, he represented the Hemlock Society in a landmark case seeking to establish a right to physician aid in dying. Since then, he has remained deeply involved in the movement for death with dignity. He is now general counsel for Final Exit Network. So welcome, Robert. And what? Yeah. You want to do a first? No, I didn't know. Sorry. I didn't know if you were going to be here. Have you looked at it? Or? Okay. But I thought it would be great for you to be here for our conversation. And so we want to have this very interactive, and I think we have lots of time. And this is a small group, so I wonder if you want to go quickly around the room and introduce yourself and tell, maybe mention where you're from and why you're interested in this symposium. And do you want to start?
Charles Gessert, I'm a researcher in Minnesota, and I do my principal research on end-of-life care, particularly urban-rural differences in end-of-life care.
I'm Richard MacDonald. I'm a physician in family medicine, and I'm a senior medical advisor to the Final Exit Network that supports people in having the right to choose being in control at the end of life.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Dorothy Water from the Minnesota Center for Healthcare Ethics.
I'm Veronica Feig. I'm a professor and director of the PhD program at Illinois College. I'm also the editor of the blog for Nursing Outlook Journal. I was the editor of pediatric nursing for 25 years. I have researches on end of life and children, but I'm particularly interested in the conversation yesterday and this particular topic as well.
My name is Brian Joyce. I'm a PhD student from Chicago, and aside from that, I've been working as a research assistant at Northwestern University for a few years now, focusing on palliative care and end-of-life issues. That's my interest.
Okay, do you want to?
Jennifer Bonet, I'm the executive director of the Arizona Affiliate of the Public Health Association, and I'm here just for personal interest.
I'm Sarah Weiner, I'm a third year medical student at UMass, and I just my first 6 months of clinical care, so it has become very important and interesting to me.
I'm Jeff Richardson, I'm from Fort Collins, Colorado, teaching at Colorado State University, and I serve on a board that provides hospice.
I'm Sue Ledwig. I'm from University of Rochester Medical Center. I'm a researcher there. I work also the data manager in the palliative care program. And my boss is Dr. Tim Quill, who, if you are familiar with palliative care, you probably know who he is, but we have a very active research program at our facility. And we were the first academic medical
the home health, the hospice, Stewart County Public Health, and we just started Tali Care Program. I'll be in touch with that. Excuse me. So we're just getting that started.
Hi, Siobhan Gilchrist. I'm an attorney and a former epidemiologist. I do policy work at CDC. I'm actually personally interested because I also do a little bit of advanced health directives on the side. For them.
I'm Ann Morgan. I'm from Oregon. I'm a nurse practitioner and a nurse midwife, and I work in a hospital in my role right now with palliative care. And as probably most of you know, Oregon has had a death with dignity law for, oh gosh, 20 years now.
My name is Cynthia Velasquez, I'm from Mexico. I'm an internal medicine specialist and a palliative care specialist. Certified by Stein Hospital, a degree, master's degree in public health and a master's degree in ethics. And I'm about to start a master's degree in palliative care with Spain. So I've been working with terminally ill patients with end-stage kidney disease in the Mexican Institute of Social Security. I do work actively with terminally ill patients of all varieties of internal medicine.
I'm Alexandra Morris, I'm a gerontologist, and I work for the Alzheimer's Association here in Northern California.
I'm Julia Hanley, I'm here with Robert. I'm a life member of Fine Life with Network.
At Alt. I teach at Towson University, which is outside of Baltimore. I teach legal and medical issues in healthcare and health policy in Beijing. And also, I'm on an IRB, the IRB Queen too, but I'm on a hospice board. It's been very interesting. I'm just sort of looking at the politics of hospice, actually, among the different groups. That's all.
All right. And I'm already introduced myself, but I study end-of-life care in nursing homes, and I've done a lot of studies on hospice care in nursing homes. I'm on a nursing home board, and that's been quite interesting since I study end-of-life care in nursing homes. And so I see it from a little different perspective in terms of the challenges of the nursing home. But luckily, or fortunately, the nursing home is quite good. I'm on the board and really impressed all the time with the staff and the administrator. So I'm going to be presenting Mary Beth Morrissey's presentation. And let me just give you a little bit of background about Dr. Morrissey. She's a postdoctoral researcher with the Fordham University Graduate School of Social Work. Graduate School of Social Service, Be the Evidence Project, funded by the Hartford Foundation and the Gerontological Society of America. Dr. Morrissey's work is located at the intersection of public health, policy practice, social work research, and ethics. She has written extensively on pain and suffering among vulnerable older adults. So our symposium is called Weighing Rights to Choose the End of Life, Major Points of Consensus and Disagreement, and her presentation is called Ethical Decision Making at the End of Life, Recognizing a New Right to Palliative Care. And Mary Beth doesn't have any relationships to disclose, at least financial. The objectives of her presentation are to describe the changing paradigms in decision making, social, ecological context, and public health approach to palliative care. Also to identify emerging right to palliative care and to discuss the implications of paradigm shifts, right to palliative care, and public health strategy for interdisciplinary collaborative practice. So Dr. Morrissey believes that how we define the problem leads to different issues that we need to talk about, and it makes a difference. She has some bullets here about describing the problem. So first, we all know that there's a growing older population. Many older adults are chronically ill. We have numerous frail elderly and persons with dementia. So because of this, there is a call for population-level strategies in primary palliative care, moving palliative care down the stream so that it's available at the primary care level. Also, there's a universal experience of dying and living through serious illness at the end of life, and so this leads to the need to deepen our understanding of these lived-through experiences. experiences. And then there's burden, illness and suffering burden on families and individuals and caregivers, and this leads to the need to prevent and relieve pain and suffering. And we also all know that healthcare costs are out of control, and Bruce Jennings and Dr. Morrissey wrote about this and talked about ethical allocation of costs. And then we have a workforce shortage, so we need workforce development, new laws and systems of care. This is, I'm not going to go through all these bullets, but this is some of the dimensions that Dr. Morrissey talks about. But what I wanted to highlight is near the end that social and economic costs have tremendous regional variations. If any of you read any of the Dartmouth data, we know that costs vary tremendously across regions. There's a high intensity of care at the end of life, high intensity of hospital care and emergency room department care. There's correlates to education, social structural factors, and health disparities. So we see a lot of the access to care and burden of illness is differential based on your education or your social economic status. And then there's, in terms of the public health dimension, we need to have better pain and disease management and illness prevention. I think I already talked about this. I'll go on to the next. So we do have benefits available in our country. One is the hospice benefit, and this is a Medicare benefit. It's one of the richest benefits in the U.S. healthcare system, although those of you working in healthcare know there are limitations to access. You need a six-month prognosis to access hospice, and you need to also give up your Medicare Part A benefits, which include hospitalizations, skilled nursing home care, and other benefits. So there are issues with that. We do have non-hospice palliative care available now in the U.S., but there really is no funding stream for this. So it has grown tremendously in hospital. There's some seats over here. It has grown tremendously in hospitals, and I think there are articles that have been coming out showing their benefits to palliative care in hospitals for the patient. But also, I think the reason it's grown without having a funding stream is because it saves the hospitals money, and so they have made a business case for palliative care in hospitals, and hospitals are now really embracing that. So we have Medicare and Medicaid as public programs for end-of-life care, and then with the Affordable Health Care Act and the state health benefit exchanges that are to be created under this act, we really don't know what's going to be covered in terms of hospice and palliative care at this point, and of course, a lot of it all depends on the election next Tuesday. So then Dr. Morrissey talks about layered decision making in relation to total social ecology of patients. So the decision making for seriously ill persons typically is viewed as choosing between treatment options. So examples of treatment options where choices are made, especially for frail elderly in nursing homes, are whether to go to the hospital or whether to go to the emergency room, whether a tubing thing. A feeding tube is introduced when a patient isn't eating or a resident isn't eating, whether dialysis is continued or initiated for these frail individuals. And decision making is layered. It occurs at the bedside, at the facility, at the system level, and macro levels. So there's a total social ecology of patient. So we need to understand the moral experience of older adults in the context of this total social ecology. And this has important implications for person-centered care ethics, collaborative practice, and advocacy. Medical decision-making, not biomedical or technical, but interpersonal, draws upon the values and preferences of seriously ill patients and their relations with family members and others, fundamentally ethical in character. For those of you who came in later, Dr. Morrissey couldn't make it out from New York, so I'm I'm the moderator and I'm doing her presentation. So. And I said earlier to everybody, if you have comments you want to interject, feel free. I don't know if I can answer your questions, but maybe someone else can answer them in the audience, so feel free. We want to make this interactive, so it's not quite as boring to me just reading the slide. So there's two historical, there's a seat up here and over here if you want to sit down. So there's two historical movements. There's a shift from individualistic to relational paradigm. So with the individualistic approach is the focus on patient rights and individual empowerment. With the relational approach is the focus on systems planning and intervention, and the hospice model being an example. Shared decision-making and solidarity. So it goes from a transactional decision-making to communicative decision-making, from adversarial autonomy to relational autonomy, relational rights and valuing, and from individualistic, ecological, and humanistic conceptions of end-of-life care. So some care notions in relation to this relational paradigm are that rights are relational. There's the humanistic perspective that human beings are fundamentally social and relational. Social ecological context is the nexus of social and cultural relations among human beings. Decision making involves cognitive, affective, and communicative dimensions. Shared informed medical decision making, communication that is cultural and family appropriate. Decision-making that is not ad hoc, but instead centered around an advanced plan and continuity of care across the continuum of care. So these are notions that Dr. Morrissey relates. I'm not going to read through all this, but just give you a definition of palliative care. And that's interdisciplinary care that aims to prevent and relieve suffering and improve quality of life for patients with chronic, serious, and advanced life-limiting illness in their families. Now, New York State has introduced palliative care legislation, and the definition shown up on the slide is the definition used in that legislation. Palliative care is offered concurrently with appropriate medical treatment. So unlike hospice, where patients could no longer access curative care or hospital care, they can do that when they're receiving palliative care. Like hospice, it focuses on the patient family as the unit of care. And hospice, in the continuum of palliative care, is considered palliative care at the end of life. So hospice is a form of palliative care. And the public health strategy, then, is to integrate palliative care into all levels of society, from community upward and from palliative care specialists downward into the healthcare system. So as I mentioned, New York State has new laws on palliative care. Their public health and policy goals relate to workforce development, primarily palliative care workforce, innovative models of care, improving quality of care, improving care and health, and reducing costs. So in February 2011, there was the Palliative Care Information Act passed in New York, and this mandates the offer of information and counseling about palliative care and end-of-life options to terminally ill patients by MDs and nurse practitioners. I'm like the fact that they said communication came from MDs and nurse practitioners, because we all know with advanced directives that sometimes it ends up being the admissions clerk that's asking the person about advanced directives and not a care provider. Then there's the Palliative Care Access Act, passed in September of 2011. This covers institutions, except hospices, and extends mandates to chronically ill individuals and requires policies at these institutions. And these mandates are all consistent with the World Health Organization public health model on policy, drug availability, implementation, and education and training. So in relation to requests to hasten death, Dr. Morrissey lists some considerations, which I'll go through. One are the first are the legal and ethical consensus. or is the legal and ethical consensus. Request decisions to hasten death are legally and ethically distinct from foregoing life-sustaining treatment. So in terms of Oregon, the Oregon's Death with Dignity Act show utilization has increased. Procedures are used predominantly by white and better educated residents of the state, and there's little or no data on palliative care interventions and mental health screenings and referrals. So maybe later a person from Oregon might want to comment on that. And then the in relation to public health concerns are the inequitable access to health care, palliative care, the underlying social determinants of health that create inequities that cannot be corrected through medical interventions and medical decision making. And the nature of the ethical conflict is that the individual right to self-determination may be in conflict with societal interest in population health and well-being. Social and relational paradigms of care and decision-making may be helpful in understanding these conflicts. So in conclusion, Mary Beth wrote this out so I could share it with you, so I'll read. She feels that there's a call for deeper reflection and well-designed research studies in relation to these decisions at the end of life or near the end of life. So first she says, hastening death policy and practice raise ethical issues for policymakers as well as for practitioners who provide care to seriously ill patients who are suffering. These issues center around deep humanistic, cultural, and sociological concerns and the patient herself or himself. The patient's own meaning of living through serious illness and dying and accessing the patient's meaning in the context of her, his full personhood and human development over the life course. These meanings have implications for the social and relational nature of the patient's lived experiences at the end of life, including desires for empathic care from formal and informal caregivers and the significance of such experiences as person, environment, situated in a cultural, social life world. And then next, in relation to public health strategies, Dr. Morris, he says, on a more global scale, more attention needs to be paid to social structural determinants of health, mental health, and well-being, such as income, education, and housing, in forms of structural discrimination that perpetuate inequities in access to hospice and palliative care that may influence patient experiences and outcomes at the end of life. And last, in conclusion, striving to eliminate inequities in the attainment of healthcare justice for all persons is an important public policy goal relevant to serious public discourse and public deliberation about hastening death practices. In light of this goal, as well as the dearth of empirical evidence about the personal, social, and cultural meanings of decisions to hasten one's life, the question of what hastening death means for human development, human agency, and human freedom at the end of life remains one that calls for deep reflection and well-designed research studies. So it's the end.